You're listening to On the Same Page, a podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Welcome back to another episode of On the Same Page. I'm Abby, a librarian at the Central Library, and with me today is EJ, my brand new coworker.
Hi, everybody. I'm EJ, brand new reference librarian here at JMRL. I'm very happy to get started.
Thanks for joining us. In today's episode, we'll be sharing a conversation with you that was recorded during a recent pandemic parenting program. They have lots of great things to say about taking care of yourself and your kids when many of us are burned out.
But before we get to that, we've got to have our book chat.
Okay, EJ, what do you have for book chat this time?
So for my very first book chat, I'm reading a book called The Anagram Guide to Waking Up by Beatrice Chestnut, Urano Pais, and it is quite interesting. I haven't gotten too far into it yet, but if you are unfamiliar with anagrams, I wanted to just read a little bit of the description from the Amazon website so you can kind of see what you're getting from it. This is a personal transformation book rooted in the wisdom of the anagram system of personality types. It is a book about waking up and growing into the best version of yourself. It is a book that shows you how to discover who you are and what you can be. It's about finding your path, facing your shadow, and discovering your true self. It's sort of like a good news, bad news type of story. Good news is you've gotten through childhood and everything like that. Bad news is in order to grow, sometimes you have to experience some pain. So you can use your negative habits or just habits in general and kind of springboard you to move beyond those habits. And an anagram is a really great way to learn how to do that. I'm pretty unfamiliar with anagrams before I started this journey, and it really is a journey. And so I'm really excited to get further into the book, but I do recommend it. It is recommended for people who are beginners into anagrams. And so I really hope that people will enjoy reading about it or even listening to it. So not too much for me on that, but hopefully we'll check in a couple weeks. I'll maybe know what my personality type is by then and we can talk more about it.
So EJ, does the beginning of the book take you through finding your anagram? Like, is it, and just for our listeners who aren't familiar, is this like the INTJL? It's a series of letters that describe who you are. Is that correct?
It's similar to those type of personality tests. I think there's a lot of different types of those. An anagram is more finding like your own self-discovery through 9 different personality types that are set forward in an anagram. And this book, 9 chapters, each chapter writing about a different personality type. And you basically use each chapter to decide whether or not that's part of your personality. And it's nice because you can jump around the book and just read the chapters that most speak to you. And so it's not one of those books you have to read from cover to cover. It is very much like a sort of like a reference to discovering your true self. So it does walk you through exactly what the anagram system is, how the personalities work, and the introduction is about 20 pages long, but you get tons of information about anagrams right from the start. So it's a good place to start. What about you, Abby? What do you have this week?
Well, for my book this time, I went in the direction of following my enjoyment from a recent book I read called The Sound of a Wild Snail Eating, which was a fascinating nonfiction book about the life of a snail. So I popped it into Novelist, which, plug here for Novelist, which is an amazing database we have that can help you find your next book. And Novelist recommended Lab Girl by Hope Jarin, which is a mix of memoir and science writing. I found it similar to the snail book in that it had an intersplicing effect where sometimes you would have a chapter about hope and then you would have a writing about the plants. It kept you on your toes. You were not in one world or one type of narrative for too long. I'm really glad that I'm reading this book now, too, because it's the perfect time to read a kind of book like this. It's spring, things are blooming. We just planted our first garden at our house, so I'm looking around me at all these plants and living things, and I'm seeing them in a whole new way. So it's very exciting. The other part about this book that I really loved is the friendship element. Hope is writing this about her journey as a woman in science, and part of that journey includes her lab mate, Bill. And so they become quick friends, and their friendship is super deep and intimate right off the start. They have this shared passion, they obviously spend a lot of time together, and it just seems to work almost effortlessly. I will say, I'm like you, that I haven't finished my book. So
we'll do a checkup next time, yeah, see where we're at.
But at this point in the book, what has been interesting to me is that this friendship that they have is so lacking in tension. Like, there are no awkward moments. I'm not seeing Hope worrying about her friendship or fretting about it. They just seem to work well, and it's easy. It seems indestructible. It seems effortless. So it's enjoyable to read because you're dropped into this energy and this synergy, and it's fun. It's enjoyable. It honestly feels nostalgic because for me, it reminded me of childhood friendships that are just easy and it just works. But I'm interested to see, as I keep reading, if the book creates more tension with the friendship, because if you're someone like me where you've been living in the pandemic, and maybe you're like me and that you have a young child, or maybe you're just like me and you have a busy life, sometimes it feels like it's hard to find those friends or maintain those friendships. So you look in the book and you think, how did they get so lucky and that they have this easy friendship? Or am I doing something wrong? It's interesting. It's thought-provoking. It's not necessarily bad, but, you know, you're noticing those feelings that come up about friendship and life and who we spend our time with and how we spend it. I also should say that, speaking of friendship, the book that this reminds me of, besides The Snail Book, is one of my favorite books by Ann Patchett, who's one of my favorite authors. And that book is Truth and Beauty, which is another book about a deep friendship, and it's a lovely book. I'll close my book chat by saying Ann Patchett recommended this book, and it's always a good sign when your favorite author recommends a book. So she wrote, "Some people are great writers while other people live lives of adventure and importance. Almost no one does both. Hope Jahren does both. She makes me wish I'd been a scientist." And all I can say is I so far wholeheartedly agree with Ann Patchett. I think this is a great book.
What an endorsement that is.
In this next segment, we'll be sharing the recording with Jackie Lazo, who is a local author. We have Sarah and Leon, licensed clinical social workers and therapists. And we have Emily, who is a parent coach. So without further ado, we'll drop you in to their conversation.
I think I'm just going to start off with telling you a little bit about how I got involved in this project, or how I ended up creating a project for myself in the midst of the pandemic. So I really, as a mother of a now 2.5-year-old, but she was pretty young when this all started 2 years ago. And I really felt like I hadn't yet created a parenting community or a caregiver community. Have a wonderful network in Charlottesville and beyond, but really felt like that was something I wanted to ground myself in, specifically within the context of COVID. What was I going to do? How are we going to do this together? And I felt like there were a lot of parents I talked to and they felt the same way. I can remember an early conversation with a former colleague who, about a week into the pandemic, was saying how her 12-year-old was saying some concerning things about what she was experiencing and how scared she was. And the anxiety levels were really high. And my friend didn't know where to go or who to talk to. And it just got me thinking. And I started to talk to some more families that I know in my network. And it kind of evolved from there. I really wanted to create a lifeline. So I think that allows all of us to come together. And at least we feel a little bit less isolated. I'm sure all of you have had some grief around this in some way or other, whether it's job loss or a family member or just grieving the 2 years that we've lost. I mean, feeling like we didn't really move forward, but the time passed. So really trying to capture some of the conversations I had with families and touch on what I thought was valuable to share. So, and then I brought these great individuals together because this project has allowed me to meet some incredible people within the Charlottesville community and beyond. And these three are fantastic. I thought it would be really great to talk to some local experts to get their opinion and thoughts on this situation. So, Emily, I'm going to start with you if that's okay. And just a little framing. So as I mentioned, really best way to support your kids, the starting place is by taking care of yourself. And so I'm just wondering if you can share some tips from your perspective on how do we support ourselves and each other, our partners right now? Where do we begin that process?
Awesome. Thank you. Well, the first thing really, it kind of points to what we are doing here tonight, which is really acknowledging that we're not alone in this and that being part of a community, reaching out and being connected to other people is so incredibly helpful. When the pandemic first started, my instinct was, I need to start doing Zoom calls. I wanted to bring people together because it was such a unsteady time. The relief that people have found, that parents have found when sharing about their experiences, even if they might be different, but sharing about those experiences and the challenges has been very comforting. And so that really is my first piece is it can be hard to reach out to either a friend, but again, like attending this kind of event where we can come together and hear from other people's point of view and share about what's going on. It's just, it's less isolating and it's less difficult. So that's my first one is just really knowing that you're not alone through whether it's the worries, the exhaustion, the multitasking that we have to do. And then a lot of families have seen increases in their children's challenging behavior, which sometimes it's normal challenging behavior, but it's just amplified. So that just recognizing that we're not alone. The other thing, the second thing kind of points to what you were saying about that idea of putting on the oxygen mask. And I know we hear it a lot in terms of this idea of self-care. The one piece that I would say about it is if we can each find a moment of stillness every day, to me, that seems achievable. Like just a few moments of stillness or a moment of peace, a moment of calm. And that really looks different for every person. I'm not someone who can sit still and meditate. My mind is worrying. I get antsy. So like sitting still doesn't work for me. So I need to be moving. So that might mean stretching or it might mean walking. So that works for me to actually experience some stillness is ironically in movement, but it can look a lot of different ways for different people. But finding that one little thing that just gives you that access to stillness can just create more bandwidth when you're interacting with your children. It's like feeding yourself. It's nourishing yourself for just whether it's a few moments or a few minutes, as much as you can to access that calm. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing, and this is what I work with parents a lot on, is this combination of like being a detective for magical moments and connection in your home. Because I know like when we're experiencing frustration or challenging behavior, or we're stuck at home with our kids, sometimes that's all we see. And so to start looking for, even if it's just 1 minute or one interaction, kind of being on the lookout for these magical moments or these moments of opportunity for connection. So I'll give an example of a client I was working with who was really struggling around screen time with her teen at the time. And just was feeling so frustrated with the amount of screen time. And I invited her to start looking for these magical moments. And I know it might sound corny, but just look for moments of joy, look for little glimmers of like, oh, there you are. And she witnessed her child just interacting with her cat in this hilarious way and just saw her child come to life and interacting with their cat. And it really turned a corner for this parent in that the way that they saw who their child was, like really like the inner being of this child and the connection that they had and that they were able to experience laughter. It really started to, it altered their relationship, and it really kind of altered the trajectory of how this parent interacted with her child. And so it might seem really small, but it's the kind of thing that it can really impact the dynamic and how the child sees themselves and how the parent sees the child and just all of it. So those are the three things that I invite you to do. So one, you're not alone. The second is finding that moment of stillness. And then the third is be a detective for these like little moments of magic or moments of opportunity for connection.
I love that idea of being a detective, because I think that really speaks to this idea that a lot of parents before the pandemic or caregivers before the pandemic, we had a network of people within the school system in particular, but in general, who were able to support us and kind of do some of that detective work for us. And so that lack of that kind of feedback loop has been really hard for a lot of parents. And it's put us in a position where we need to be even more observant of what's going on. And being able to do that, you need to come at it from the place of finding your own sort of centered space. I know I have just sort of a silly story from last night. My husband and I were talking, and my daughter it was like dinner time, and my 2.5-year-old was sort of singing and talking and shouting and trying to get our attention. And so my husband looked at her, and I give credit to their school for doing this, but he said, okay, let's put up our hands and let's breathe in and pause and breathe out and breathe in. And what you do is you just trace your fingers. And the three of us did it. And it takes, you know, a couple of seconds, but honestly, we're all like, okay, like I don't need to go and hide in the closet for a few minutes. Although that's okay too. I know one of my friends just told me the other day, she created in the back of an old closet, a little Zen bunker for herself. She can go in there when she needs some space. Thank you for those tips, Emily. I think that's really great. Oh, and one other thing, and Sarah, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but early on when Sarah and I started talking, she had mentioned a great story of contextualizing self-care, which we all hear and some of us roll our eyes at.
So many people that I work with, I'm a psychotherapist in outpatient practice, I have my own practice, and so many people, and I'm kind of like, what great things are you doing for yourself? And the report back I get is, well, I took a shower. I got my hair cut. That's hygiene, people. That is not actually self-care. But so many of us do feel like that's self-care. And if that does feel like self-care, that's a sign. That's a little bit of a red flag.
That's great. And it leads me to my question for you, Leon, which is really around like, how do we support our kids in this? And kind of what are some red flags that we should look for in terms of what is concerning? When do we need to reach out for additional support?
Yeah, and along the lines that you mentioned earlier, we know our kids better than anybody else knows them. And oftentimes people will tell you different things, which is great. That is very helpful. But at the same time, I think that really you have to also just be able to trust yourselves. But reaching out for support is also positive, because sometimes we just need some reassurance. I think one thing that we can do with regards to supporting our kids through this time is, first thing is just being present. Oftentimes, I know you, like you mentioned earlier, we get really busy. And some of us are busier now than we were before the pandemic, right? Sometimes we start thinking about work, or we're thinking about what's going to happen next week, or we get stuck when we get home on what happened earlier that day, or we're thinking about COVID and how that's going to impact us next year. And we don't take the time out just to be with our children and just to listen to them. Sometimes I find that when you put your phone away and actually just sit and be interested in what your child is telling you and like being responsive to their needs, you know, that goes a long way. And just a little bit about me with regards to parenting. I have a 21-year-old. I have a 16-year-old. I have a 9-year-old, and I have a 3-year-old. So I got the big spectrum here. And to be honest with you, each child, you know, has their own needs that are very unique to them and where they're at developmentally, right? You know, I can't imagine being 16 years old right now, a junior in high school, and not being able to wrestle on the wrestling team, and then have gone and traveled and competed and been the New York City champion, because I was a 3-time New York City champion in wrestling as a high schooler. So those 2 years, my junior, senior year, would have been taken from me. And that could be really challenging to just kind of really understand what it is that they're losing. They're losing. They may feel like they're having a lot of loss, and they are losing out. And I really feel bad for the fact that this is what the reality is right now. So that's one thing. Another thing that I would do is try not to keep your child isolated. Some of the things that me and my wife do, we will, take our kids on walks. We will try to let them engage in activities as much as we feel are safe, depending on what the activity is. Also, I'm doing things like for my son, he likes to play video games sometimes. So he has his headsets and he'll be talking to his friends on his headsets, but he's socializing. So he's not isolated. He's by himself. He's laughing. Sometimes I can hear him upstairs and the deep belly laughs that he gives from playing a game and the yelling. I'm like, cut it down, man. You're too dark and loud. You know what I mean? So like, and just allowing for that, just relaxing a little bit and maybe just giving in a little bit, not to the point where you want to reinforce negative behaviors, but at least to the point where you understand that maybe things aren't as traditional as you would have normally thought that they would be at this time. I think we just have to have a little bit of grace with our kids and with ourselves, and just, really as best as you can, try to do things that prevent them from being isolated. Get off that phone. Go and play a video game with you. I play with my son. Play football, whatever. I don't know. I never used to play video games, but guess what? COVID made me get back into video games, because now that's something that we do together. The last thing that I would, not to bring too many things, but the last thing I would bring as a good thing to do to support your kids through this time is also like be careful of projection. We want to make sure that we're not allowing our anxiety to make our kids too anxious. I mean, it's hard. It's hard when we have to wear a mask every day. It's hard when we have to make decisions around vaccinations and should we send our kids to school or not, in all these different, difficult, challenging decisions that we have to make as parents. And even though we might not realize that this is how we're presenting because it's just how we feel, but let me tell you something, your kids, you want to ask something? You want to find something out about me? Ask my kids. You know what I mean? They know everything. You might think they're not listening, but trust me, they are listening and they know what's going on. And they might not tell you everything they know. So just be cautious around how you project your anxiety and your fear around them so that they don't become anxious the same way. Because that could be really challenging as a child to be anxious about something that's going on around in the world when you don't even have the ability to meet your own needs independently and you're trusting on someone else to make decisions that are best for you. So let's check ours. Let's take some time to do an inventory check, check in with ourselves, and think about our behavior and how we're presenting and just evaluate yourself to see, how do I look through my children's eyes? So, those would be my 3 tips.
Thank you so much, Leon. That's really helpful. And now, Sarah, I'm going to turn to you. If you could share a little bit of your wisdom on this idea of collective trauma, what does that even mean? And can you kind of contextualize this within this space that we're living in right now?
Yeah, I feel like I'm Debbie Downer because I'm like, hey, I'm going to talk about collective trauma. So collective trauma is when, as a large group, you experience the trauma together. So it's psychological reaction, basically, to a traumatic experience or event that affects entire society. And what we're talking about more today is really entire families. So generally, when some big event happens in our lives, it impacts one or maybe two of family members in a kind of a big way. And there's always kind of another outside family member, parent, grandparent, someone to kind of anchor the traumatic experience, everybody back in, right, from the traumatic experience. When you have a collective trauma, no one really can do that because everybody is experiencing this. So really for the first time in generations, everyone is experiencing not in the exact same way, but the exact same event or situation as you are. And even for us who are in mental health, I mean, generally we get to sit in the cheap seat in the room, truthfully. We're not experiencing, when we're treating someone for trauma, we're not experiencing the trauma they're experiencing. And so we can kind of sit in the room and really anchor that. But now, even for us in mental health, we are also simultaneously experiencing what everybody else is experiencing. So it's a very unique situation that we're all going through. And when you look at the family, it's a really unique situation. So those kind of symptoms or those feelings are like stress, grief, loss, everything we've kind of previously mentioned. And it's a loss not only for some of us family members, which is really sad, but also freedom. So for our kids, it's a loss and change of routine and freedom for them. One of the things we, you know, kind of had to our advantage when things were just smoothly going through their routine was that we had kind of markers in our to watch kids with their development and in particular social development. I have a 17-year-old that I seem to share space with at my house. I am her mom. And, you know, one of the big things was when COVID started, she was a freshman in high school, which meant as a freshman, you're low man on the totem pole. You're not really going to parties yet or real social things. You are playing a sport, but you're usually playing like JV. You're not driving yet, none of those things. And all of a sudden, and so she was out of school, right, during that growth time. And then all of a sudden she's back in school and she's an upperclassman now. She's thinking about going to college. She hasn't even gone to, you know, like the prom hasn't happened for a couple of years. No dances have happened. I mean, the social development for what we usually experienced in high school, the markers are completely different and have all changed. So those things are kind of hard for us as parents to also kind of watch and figure out, really hard for them to figure out as well. I don't know if any of you have heard of this, but one of the things, kind of a theory in a sense that's come forward is something called the pandemic flux syndrome, which is in simple terms, it's kind of anything that you feel about being in this pandemic gets exacerbated. And I'm talking feelings. So anxiety, sadness, a low threshold for frustration, a little bit of depression. Essentially, what people have kind of theorized about pandemic flux is that the pandemic flux is like lighting a fire under any of those feelings. So whatever feeling you might be having, it's just exacerbated, just sent right through the roof. So that's primarily the, you know, kind of when we talk about that for adults. For kids, it's really about a, you know, tenfold for them. So again, kind of what Leanne was saying, what Emily was saying is making sure for when you're in this collective trauma that as a parent, you are grounded, that you take time to kind of figure it out for yourself is really important when we're trying to help our kids through this. When we talk about treatment or trying to manage this, we talk as you know clinicians, we recommend, of course, treats any sort of negative symptomology that you're seeing. But more than anything, kind of what Emily and Leon are saying, again, is, you know, we're the experts of our kids. So you all are going to be the first ones to notice anything different from their baseline behavior or their baseline feelings or emotions. But again, going back to how trauma impacts everyone is, you know, someone who might have a little bit of a fallout might have a giant tantrum now. And that's not necessarily a bad sign. We're all really probably very healthy humans in a really unhealthy circumstance. So we should be having some symptoms. We should be having a little anxiety. We should be having a little depression. We should be agitated and irritated by things sometimes. And our kids too. So some of that is just about patience, figuring out what the new normal is and being okay with that. Again, if things start to worry you, they feel a little further away from a baseline, then that's the time to just check in with, you know, even, and you know, certainly your partner, family member, but also truthfully, one of the best places to go is to talk to a pediatrician. They tend to also have a great baseline on our kids. Peace and calm, if you can find it. I love the back of the closet idea. I too happen to be someone who will go find safe space in my house. I have a fairly small family, so it's easy at my house. For lots of families that have a lot of kids or have multi-generations in their family, it's less easy to find that safe place. But even if, like Emily does, you walk outside all of a sudden for a deep breath, that is actually finding some peace, and that is fantastic. And again, just a little bit of grounding can go a long way. I think the other recommendation we often make is focus on what you can control and have some control over. Don't try to control the things you don't. When your kid hits that just, you know, kind of overwhelmed feeling, if you're modeling kind of all of a sudden taking a deep breath and refocusing on things that you can keep in order, you will also be modeling that for your kids, which is really helpful. I would like to, if you guys don't mind, I want to share something from Jackie's book, because one of my favorite parts of her book is the survey response. And what I want to kind of summarize and kind of leave with you is, you know, for us as adults, we realize things have three parts. We know things have beginnings, middles, and ends. Our kids don't really know that. They learn that with life experience. And so it's important to teach them that and to share that with them, that even though COVID keeps having an extended ending, we keep thinking it's going to be the end, but we're not really sure. But again, it's a lot about helping them realize that this will not be like this forever. Because if this started when you were 6 and you are now 8, it feels like forever. This is where your memory is. So even my 17-year-old who, you know, was 15 when all this started, I'm sure she feels like this is a forever, and it's not. And I think we just really need to remind our kids that it will end and we will be in a better place. So I have to say, I think overall, our kids are going to walk away with a set of coping skills that we don't even have. And I think the world and our society will be very fortunate for it. And I think it's selfishly having a 17-year-old in my house. I loved not COVID, don't get me wrong, but I know my kid launches soon. And this has created more time for me to spend with her. So I was, you know, I encourage people I knew that have kids this age just to be more thoughtful about conversations. I have to say my 17-year-old not always receptive about every life lesson I'm trying to share, but it was such a great time for me to be conscious of what I want her to leave my house with when she heads out into the world. So I think in that way, we have had some positive things come of this, but not, you know, it also feels like a giant drinking game. So, I mean, I don't think, you know, it's not that it doesn't feel stressful. I just think there are some little things we can take away that are joyful.
Right. Well, thank you to our wonderful presenters, Jackie, Emily, Leon, and Sarah. If you're interested in listening to Sarah's podcast, Podcast Therapist, we're linking that in the show notes below.
In our next episode, we'll be sharing a conversation I had with a patron named Susan. She has a great story about the transformative power of reading. When I talked to her, she was in her first 90 days of sobriety, and she read a few key books that changed her life and helped her get where she is today.
As always, this podcast is made possible through the generous support from the Friends of the Library. If you'd like to learn more or join the Friends, please head to their website at jmrlfriends.org. Please hit subscribe wherever it is you're listening to this podcast. If you have books that you'd like us to read and discuss or topics that you'd like to hear on a future episode, please email us at podcast@jmrl.org.
That's all for us today. We'll be back soon with our next episode. Thanks for tuning in. We're glad to be
on the same page.